Radiation Highway Blues. Radiation Highway Blues. Left my home in the valley, heading for the hills. I'm leaving all the gasoline behind, cause there's nothing left to kill. Ride my spotted pony into the wind, and saddle up with dreams are left, and face the nuclear chill. Radiation Highway Blues. Radiation Highway Blues. Radiation Highway. Radiation Highway Blue. I left my home in Nevada. I didn't even need.
This is Co-op, your radio station. Just twice a year, we ask for your financial support to keep our volunteer programmers going. Co-op Radio's Spring Member Drive runs from April 1st to the 15th. Please join us. Pledge your support to Vancouver's community radio station, CFRO 102.7 FM. You can support grassroots independent media. We don't get advertising dollars, and you don't have to listen to all those annoying ads. But we do depend on our members to keep our station running. We count on you. Learn more about us. You can listen to live streaming radio or past shows on the internet at coopradio.org and become a member right there where you pay with a secure server, coopradio.org, or call us at 604-684-8494 to pledge your donation. We have special programs for you. Tune in April 1st to the 15th for Co-op Radio's Spring Member Drive. Big corporations pay to fill your mind. There is an alternative on the airwaves, Vancouver Co-op Radio. Let's keep the voice of community radio alive.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 18th, 2011, and I feel like it's been weeks since we've been here in the station because we were at the Vancouver Art Gallery last week, remember,
yeah.
Carissa? And Alyssa, of course, you were absent, so it's been a while for you, too. Mm-hmm. So I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-hosts, Carissa Thorpe and Alyssa Ray. Happy Meetout Week to both of you and to all of our listeners. And just what is Meetout, you might wonder? Well, it's an annual day on or around March the 20th where people from around the world join efforts to educate the public in their local communities on the benefits of eating fruits, vegetables, and grains, and cutting out the meat and the cruelty to animals that ensues. Being March 18th today, I thought it only appropriate to do our own little observance of this international day. And so if you'd like to know more about Meetout, how you can get involved with outreach in your community, or how you can take steps towards getting the meat out of your diet and eating compassionately and in line with your values towards animals, then please tune in later on the show for this segment. If you were listening to the show last week, you would have heard our review of best-selling vegan cookbook author Issa Chandra Moskowitz's newest book called Appetite for Reduction, 125 Fast and Filling Low-Fat Vegan Recipes. I've been enjoying myself lately in discovering the amazing food in this book, and today we bring for you a feature live interview with Issa herself. She'll be speaking to us not only about appetite for reduction, but also about vegan food activism as a way to spread compassion for animals to our loved ones, our acquaintances, and to our enemies through the conduits of their stomachs. Issa is always an entertaining source of great food wisdom to listen to, and her books are equally delightful to read. I think you will really enjoy our talk with her today. Appetite for Reduction is a vegan book not only for those who want to lose weight, but also for those who wish to reduce their consumption in other manners. And we'll learn more about what Issa means by that later on in the show. But before we move on, I wanted to briefly mention that Carissa, Alyssa, and I had our first official strategic planning meeting for the Animal Voices radio show this week to determine a clear path for where we want the show to go and how we intend to pursue this. We met for a delicious lunch meeting at Planet Veg Restaurant here in Vancouver, where I happened to consume the most delicious and amazing banana chocolate chip muffin of my life. vegan, of course, and Alyssa had the same thing, too.
So good.
Yes. But food aside, I can tell you, we do have lots of great ideas for the show, and it's just a matter of time before we get them all into action. And it's not too late to submit your own ideas to us on what you'd like to see on the Animal Voices show, in which we seek to create a greater understanding of the animals with whom we share this planet. We encourage a movement towards a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and accorded the same rights that humans take for granted. And we do this via the presentation of current animal rights issues and events, news, interviews, and lifestyle tips. To submit to us your ideas, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We appreciate your suggestions. Now, Alyssa, you have some information to share with us regarding the disaster in Japan that happened last week and how this has affected the animals.
I do. About a month ago, I talked about ongoing efforts to provide care for our thousands of animals in the aftermath of the Haiti earthquake. And of course, this is, you know, long-term efforts are needed in Japan. But the devastation is heartbreaking and incomprehensible. And the mainstream media doesn't often cover stories on, you know, what the animals are going through and the people who are working tirelessly to protect them and rescue them and offer relief. So that's what I'm going to try to highlight here today. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in the face of a crisis of this proportion and you know, to feel helpless or not know how to help, but I'll offer some suggestions here quickly. First, a success story. Of course, dogs are an important role in search and rescue, and there's a group called Dog Bless You that has recently donated $200,000. They did a two-day Facebook campaign, and they were just asking for 100,000 people to like their page. And that was a success. So from March 12th and 13th, 100,000 people liked them, and they donated $200,000. So that's good to know.
Great news to hear there.
And animals are on the ground there working to rescue people. And I wanted to highlight just some groups that are, like, some Japanese groups that people could help. There's the Japan Earthquake Animal Rescue and Support. It's a coalition of three Japanese groups, which was formed to, quote, focus information, rescue, and support for animals in crisis due to the March 11th earthquake and tsunami in northern Japan. They have an up-to-date Facebook page that they update regularly. And again, that's Japan Earthquake Animal Rescue and Support. And there's a couple other local groups that I found that need help. The Nippon SPCA, apparently they have no water or electricity, and they need donations desperately. You can find a PayPal link on their site, and you can change it to English in the drop-down menu of PayPal. And the other one is Animal Rescue Kansai. That's K-A-N-S-A-I. It's a nonprofit shelter in Japan that's accepting homeless animals. And they rescued 600 animals after the Kobe earthquake in 95. So, they need a lot of support. And internationally, of course, the Humane Society International and World Society for the Protection of Animals, they're helping to coordinate large-scale efforts. One group that sort of stood out or is doing a very good job of updating the world to their actions is World Vets. They're a group of voluntary veterinarians that provide veterinary aid across the globe. They've been doing work globally for over 25 years, I think, and in different places in the world that need them. And I just checked their page and saw that to date about $35,000 has been donated.
They're going to be sending vets to Japan, right?
Yeah, right now there's just two on the ground, and there's a lot of volunteers who are wanting to go, but with the nuclear and radiation alerts, it's you know, maybe not advisable, or they're kind of holding off on that. But what they are doing now is preparing and shipping pallets with vet supplies and animal food, so people can support them. And you can Google World Vets Japan Animal Aid to find out how to help them. And yeah, I just wanted to just quickly mention that I know I have heard, I don't know if you have heard also, that people are saying that maybe this is payback for the whale hunt or something. Have you heard people say this?
In the animal rights circles, yeah. Maybe only, and that's quite unfortunate. It's sad to hear comments like that.
Like, you
know,
yeah.
I just, our, you know, fellow humans, our fellow animals.
There's so much suffering. It's not like, this is not a punishment. Like, sure, whale hunting, you know, shouldn't be stopped, but there's so
many
people die.
Countries have their faults, but no one deserves this. They're innocent people, you know, and from what I've been reading over and over again for a long, long time, is Japanese people are all really nice people too.
Yeah, no,
probably
for sure.
More so than us here in North America, you know. Yeah. And regardless, they don't deserve this. So.
Seems a little bit racist, maybe, to say something like that. In any case, I also have some events here.
All right. Oh, and I just wanted to mention, could we get links to those sites on our
Absolutely.
Website? Maybe you can send them to me. I'll put them up.
Yeah, I will do
awesome.
That
Thank
for
you.
Sure. So I am going to talk about something that's upcoming soon, which is this Sunday. In Vancouver, there is a new shoe store called Nice Shoes. And they are on Fraser Street at 3658 Fraser at 20th. And what's going on there on Sunday? Well, there's a fundraiser for Stop UBC Animal Rights Campaign. So 10% of all sales are going to the Stop UBC Animal Rights Campaign.
Stop UBC Animal Research.
Right. Right. Of course.
Just had to say it.
I just wrote AR, and that to me means
I know they're
right.
Listening, so.
Of course.
Sorry, Brian.
Yes, sorry. I am sorry. You can look fashionable, live your values, and support Stop UBC Animal Research Campaign all at the same time. And that's on Meetout Day, so a good way to celebrate that. And also upcoming just around the corner on Monday, I just thought I'd mention that there's a documentary on CBC News Network called Red Sea Jaws. It's Monday, March 21st, and also showing again the following weekend, March 26th and 27th. And probably available online. This movie is about the surge in shark attacks. Apparently news to me. I didn't know that 2010 was the highest year ever on record.
Yeah,
of shark attacks.
I very briefly read about that documentary. It sounds interesting. So when is it on?
It's Monday, March 21st,
okay.
The evening. I think
CBC.
It's 10 p.m.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure what show it's on, but CBC News.
Sometimes those documentaries are shown online, too, afterwards. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, definitely. And just wanted to make, I know we mentioned last week, but there is a motorcade for the seals happening upcoming Saturday, March 26th, so that's next Saturday. And that will start at 10 a.m. at Beach Ave and Butte in English Bay in Vancouver. So that's standing up against the seal hunt in Canada this year, where 360,000 baby seals are being killed. And apparently, the organizer, Anthony Marr, and CATCA, which is Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals, and Hope Care, which is helping other people every day with compassion assigned to reach everybody, is just trying to bring scope to that and scale. There's, basically, they need support, and if you want more information, you can probably Google motorcade for the seals.
So the idea behind the motorcade,
right.
I think, is to show the number of seals. Carissa, you were talking about this last week, to sort of give people an idea of the number of seals that are
visual.
Killed. Like, what's 300,000 seals?
It would take you, I think they said 4 hours to drive past that on going a highway speed.
Yeah, three hours, 360 kilometers.
The motorcade is going from Vancouver to Whistler, and that's only one third of the length that it would be, probably because you have to go 80 on the Sea to Sky Highway.
Yeah.
So you'd be driving for probably 6 hours.
I think there's going to be a lot of media there. Yeah. It's going to draw attention to the issue, which is really important. Perhaps, you know, I haven't seen the seal hunt being portrayed in the mainstream media lately. I know it's started. The gray seal hunt has started, and the baby seal hunt, has it started already? No, March is when it's supposed to start. We'll be finding more about that next week, because we'll be doing the whole show about the seal hunt for sure. But I know the seal hunt, the gray seal hunt, has definitely started, and I just haven't seen that much in terms of mainstream media, unfortunately.
Yeah, on that. I definitely feel like I see more media in the States than in Canada covering the seal hunt, or other countries trying
boycott
to say
Canada.
Yeah, saying,
right.
Yeah.
And here it is. We are
And here are government officials eat it and serve it.
I've been definitely seeing stories. There's a story, actually, that came out this week that said that Norway is now going to put forth their support for the seal hunt. And they also do illegal whaling, too, right? So it's not that nice.
Not good people to be aligned with. All right.
Anything else? That's it?
I think that's it for events, yes.
So if anyone has events, where should they send them to?
Well, that's actually, if you could tell them, that would be great.
Sure, I'll do that. You can send
Allison.
An email to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. So I just want to remind our listeners, this is 102.7 FM Vancouver Cooperative Radio, the Animal Voices show, and we're very happy to be here today. I just wanted to maybe mention that we are all here in the studio, same room as the phone, so if people are trying to phone us, fortunately we can't answer the phone because our receptionist took the day off today. So anyways, it's meet out week, and that means a few things depending on where you are in your path to helping the animals. If you're a regular listener to our show, you'll know that we at Animal Voices promote adopting a compassionate plant-based diet as the best way that any one single person can do their part to literally save animals' lives. A person who eats a plant-based vegan diet, that is one free from all animal products, such as animal flesh and secretions, will literally save the following numbers of animals that a typical North American person would otherwise eat per year. And that is approximately 130 shellfish, 40 fish, 26 chickens, 1 turkey, nearly half a pig, and a little more than 1/10 of a cow. Were you too aware of these numbers?
I know
these are new numbers that I've seen.
I know that I've heard the 100 animals a year, but I've never really heard it broken down into the actual animals.
That's actually not including sea animals. So when you include the shellfish and the fish, it actually comes up to about 199 animals a year. Yeah, so that's in 1 year. And if you stop eating animal products for the next 60 years, that's 12,000 animals that you, as a single consumer, have the power to save by just not eating them. That's a huge difference.
Wow.
So if you're 20 now and you give up meat and you live to the, probably will live older than 80, actually, which is the median age for Canada. But if you cut out the animal products, you're going to live to well past 100, I'm sure.
And then think about people having families as well and raising children vegan. That's even more animals.
So 12,000 animals at least in a lifetime that
you could go vegan,
literally say,
more.
Well, this is vegan people, definitely, okay. Yeah. So it's about half that actually for vegetarians and twice that for vegans. So, of course, the 12,000 doesn't even include the people around you who may also be inspired to kick the meat habit by way of your own example. And I guarantee you that does happen a lot. You know, just spread that compassion and example. I do encourage people to embrace the spirit of Meat Out, which is an international observance helping individuals evolve to a wholesome, compassionate diet of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, and to take the next step by eating lower on the food chain. Meat Out is organized by the U.S. national nonprofit public interest organization Farm Animal Rights Movement, otherwise known as FARM, and they do some really wonderful work in the name of educating the public to help the animals. We have had them on the show before, in fact, to talk about some of their campaigns. Meat Out has grown explosively since its inception in 1985 to become the world's largest annual grassroots diet education program. featuring 50 states in the U.S. and dozens of other countries, including Canada as well. And what that is that around the world, on or around March the 20th every year, individuals and different groups take it upon themselves to hold events in their home cities to educate the public on the benefits to both humans and animals of a plant-based diet. You can find out what different events are going on around the world and in your state or country by going to their website, which is meatout.org. One popular way to celebrate meatout is by holding what are called feed-ins. Do you know what a feed-in is, Chris and Alyssa?
You were explaining it earlier, I'd never heard of it.
You hadn't known before today. So as I was telling you before, a feed-in is basically when you provide free food to the masses. And who doesn't like free food, right? So I think a feed-in is a wonderful way to promote compassionate eating because the way to a person's heart is often through food. And as I said, who doesn't like free food, right? So it's a way to draw strangers from the street to come eat your wonderful, delicious vegan food.
I've been to, the Indian temples where they provide free vegetarian meals.
Yeah, that's a really good example of a
feed-in. They totally appeal to non-vegetarians. It's beautiful.
I've participated in several feedings, some of them for Meatout, actually, here in Vancouver. And I'll tell you that when there is free food on site, people will come. And then they'll get to taste whatever delicious vegan food you are handing out to the public and also get to take some informative literature with them as well, which is, of course, an important part of education. If you want to see some of the best full-color pamphlets on why and how to adopt a plant-based diet, one place I really recommend is veganoutreach.org. Vegan Outreach is a nonprofit group that solely exists just to publish these wonderful and accessible booklets that are specifically geared towards those who probably don't know anything about vegetarian eating, and that is to say that to the general public. So you can even download and print the booklet straight off their website if you wish as PDFs, but Vegan Outreach will also send you professionally printed out copies as well if you want. Vegan Outreach also has a cruelty-free eating starter guide available on their site for free as well, which is another beautiful full-color booklet that gives you recipes and food product recommendations on how to start eating a plant-based diet. In fact, there are quite a few free vegan and vegetarian starter guides out there available from other groups as well, and I do encourage you to check them out, either to read and use yourself in your path to cutting out the meat or to give to others to read. Some of the other veg starter guide booklets that I recommend are from the groups Mercy for Animals, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I have posted links to all of these free veg starter guides on our website, animalvoices.org, so please do check them out. Another resource I'd like to point you to, if you've become inspired or even just curious to eat less meat and more fruits, vegetables, and grains, is Farm's program called Meat Out Mondays. Meat Out Mondays is an email campaign in which they send you a weekly colorful e-newsletter containing recipes, product suggestions, health news, encouragement, and inspiration. Just go to meatoutmondays.org to sign up for your free newsletter. I looked at the current one for this week, and it looks like a great resource to me. This week's email has a yummy-looking recipe for a green spring risotto with complete nutritional information included, as well as an article that cites a recent survey of more than 2,000 vegans conducted that showed that healthy eating is enjoyable, satisfying, and no harder than any other eating choice. I've actually recently read the whole report of results for the survey, and I think it deserves more discussing perhaps in a future show. And as you may know, the internet boasts a vast abundance of amazing and delicious plant-based recipes in general. If you do a Google search for vegan recipes, you'll instantly get over 2 million webpage results. So if you're a newbie looking for vegan recipes, I did that just to be able to say 2 million. I knew it would be something in that manner. Like people
I think it's exploded in the last few years since I went vegan.
You know, people always say, what do you eat? Well, just do a Google search. 2 million different pages.
I know. I can never even answer that.
Thousands of recipes on each one. So if you're a newbie looking for vegan recipes, how do you start? I have many, 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 many suggestions, and I'm sure you both do as well. And perhaps we can get more into those in future shows, as it's a nearly infinite span of ideas that we definitely don't have time to even adequately cover in this short segment. But one relevant site that I will point you to right now is the website meatoutmondays.org. On their recipes page, they have featured a good selection of really yummy-looking plant-based recipes. Some examples on this page are banana oat waffles, irresistible French toast, Thai-style vegetable curry, easy veggie pizza pie, mocha chocolate mousse, and chocolate chip walnut cookies. So you might be wondering, but how do you make waffles and French toast and chocolate mousse and cookies without eggs, or pizza without cheese? Well, as someone who has been eating vegan for years now, as second nature, I often wonder, why would anyone use eggs and dairy in all those recipes? It's actually totally unnecessary. And when you look at the food photos that accompany these recipes, you'll see yourself that these foods actually look just as normal and delicious as your typical waffles, pizza, and cookies. They're not some weirdo, like, hippie versions of the food that you're used to, just in case you were wondering. So it's really just a matter of adopting a way of thinking that is different than what 99.9% of us here in North America have been used to thinking is the only way to make foods that we enjoy and are used to. That is by using animal products in them. It's called thinking outside the box. And I do encourage you all to do just that. Be open-minded. Mm-hmm. Think outside the box. Question what you think is normal. Dig into your heart and acknowledge that compassion for all living creatures that I think we are mostly all born with, but that gets quickly buried during or before our childhood. And I do think human nature is to be compassionate, to care, to love, and that means to respect and be concerned for the non-human animals that we have dominion over. And dominion means to care for these animals, not to abuse them. We don't need to eat animals, and so we don't need to make them suffer. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to explore these thoughts this week during Meat Out and to take that step forward to lessen your harm to the animals with whom we share this earth. So remember to check out meatout.org and meatoutmondays.org for lots of info there, as well as the other sites that are listed on our webpage for the March 18th, 2011 show at animalvoices.org. And if you're already meat-free, take another step forward and visit veganoutreach.org to get some great booklets to hand out and be generous and give out some yummy vegan food to show others how joyful and delicious eating an animal-free diet can be. And that's all I have.
There's also Earth Day. We also do a veggie challenge for a week. You can sign up there through our website and get a week's worth of emails as well.
EarthSave.ca?
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks for that little tip. And there's so many resources out there. So right now I'm going to play a little PRA and then we'll get to our news.
All I really want to do is make a living singing songs. But how will I get on the radio when I cuss and swear and sing about loving women? I sing about loving women.
Made for lesbians by lesbians, the Lesbian Show on 102.7 CFRO has been providing music and news for almost 30 years.
You're my sister, you're my brother. When they ask you, you check other.
The Lesbian Show, Thursdays from 8 to 9 p.m. For more information, contact lesbianshow@yahoo.com.
Just like me.
All right, and in the news this week, I had some things prepared, and then there was some late-breaking news at 4 o'clock this morning after I finished the news, of course. So I'm just sort of going to discuss what's on the front page of today's Province. The story is titled, Undercover Investigation Reveals Richmond Firm's Bid to Buy Animal Parts from Endangered Species. So I'm just going to read a little bit of it here, and then we can sort of discuss what you guys think. The BC government has launched an investigation following an undercover probe by the province that showed a Richmond-based company seeking to buy captive tiger fur and bones, along with fur from Canada's endangered species, for its clients in China. After initially denying its involvement in the animal trade, officials of the Canada to Asia Business Network, or CABN, when confronted with emails and video evidence obtained by the province, said they would seek legal counsel on the legality of the animal trade business. We would not do anything illegal. I said we wanted to deal with legal company, said project manager Debbie Wang, saying the CABN did not know it was illegal to export tiger parts or offer to buy the fur of Canadian endangered animals. I have no idea whether it's against the law or not, said Wang. Vancouver-based business journalist Mark Davis provided the province details of a six-week undercover probe he conducted by email with CABN, in which he found the company tried to buy tiger fur and parts and endangered Canadian animals. In February, a mining analyst who knew of Davis's interest in animal welfare gave him a CABN ad asking for a supplier of fur products. Davis emailed the Canadian Canada to Asia Business Network asking if they wanted endangered species or tiger fur. CABN officials made it clear to Davis they wanted to set up a long-term, high-volume supply of exotic and endangered animals to ship to China. Project manager Cindy Dong wrote in a February 23rd email, "The client is looking for different types of large wild animal furs, including the Canada's endangered species list. Sea otter is a bit too small for his demand." The province then videotaped Davis talking on the phone to CABN project manager Debbie Wang. Wang can be heard on tape seeking to buy tiger fur, paws, bones, and tiger penis bones in particular, along with any quantity of endangered animal fur without any messy parts. "We don't want the meat, just the fur and the bones, but I like to have them very clean, like one of those sheep mats on the floor," said Wang. Wang's concern with the idea of buying the pelt of an extinct Eastern Canadian cougar appeared to be about how much it would cost. Although animal trafficking worldwide is an estimated $10 billion business, with China emerging as a huge and burgeoning market, Wang balked at paying $300 for extinct Eastern cougar fur, saying she'd ask her Chinese client. "Five tigers is actually not enough," Wang also said in an earlier email responding to a suggestion that a fictitious roadside zoo owner would slaughter its captive tigers to sell to CABN. So,
you know, yeah. I read this story on the province website mm-hmm. this morning because you posted it at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I think, and I saw it, as I was saying, I saw it 38 seconds after he yeah. posted it. Anyways, it was quite shocking, and it is a breaking news story, as yeah. you may have mentioned, so check out, it'll be on theprovince.com.
Yeah, and I posted it to our website as well.
Oh, to our Facebook o'clock. Page?
Yeah, our Facebook page.
Animal yeah. Voices Vancouver. So do check that out. I bet it's going to get a lot of international attention as well. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, they have a video on there of this, of the woman,
of the
Wang.
Phone call, yeah.
Of the phone call, and it's really interesting. You know, she's saying...
I didn't actually notice that, but yeah.
I'm quite surprised that being a person who is in the business of importing mm-hmm. animal parts, furs and bones yeah. and penises and that she doesn't know that it's illegal. I find that hard to believe.
She must know that it's illegal.
She did specifically ask on the conversation, is this a legal business? I think maybe because she was obligated to, or she wanted to cover herself.
Maybe.
But how could you not know? How could you be in that yeah. business and not know that it's illegal to import an endangered species penis? Come on. And fur.
Yeah, why would it be? Why would we have an endangered species list if it was legal to kill them or trade their
parts?
Right,
because the journalist Mark Davis, I believe he was saying on the phone, you know, mm-hmm. he was making the reference to endangered species. These are endangered yeah. species, and at one point she said, "Oh, and this is a legal business, right?" Like, come on,
yeah,
you know, you're a business person.
There was also another quote that says, "We are Buddhists. We don't believe in killing," is what she said.
Well, that was before yeah. he said, "Oh, but I actually did an undercover investigation." Mm-hmm. This was after the yeah. phone call. "And actually, you did do this." And then yeah. they admitted to it.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's really sad, too, because when I read that, mm-hmm. we're Buddhists. Buddhists are vegetarians, usually.
Yeah.
They don't believe we kill. I'm like, oh, I can identify with that. That's good they don't kill. Oh, that's not true.
Yeah.
And I realized that was just, anyways, really, yeah. really interesting piece of news there.
So I'm sure a lot of people will be talking about it because it's front page of the province, and I've already seen people reading it this morning. So
yeah, definitely good. Thanks for that yeah. Really important news piece.
Oh, and maybe I should mention as well, it's a good idea. I immediately emailed the province just to sort of thank them for covering the story and for taking it seriously. And I wasn't 100% sure if it was going to be on the front page until I saw it this morning, but that's a good idea for our listeners to do as well, so they continue to cover the stories they've been covering like this.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. For our feature interview today, we have best-selling vegan cookbook author and activist Issa Shandra Moskowitz on the show. If you're familiar at all with popular animal cruelty-free recipe books, you'll perhaps know Issa from such volumes she has written as Vegan with a Vengeance, Vegan Cupcakes Take Over the World, Veganomicon, and Vegan Cookies Invade Your Cookie Jar. Issa has wowed us here already at Animal Voices with the release of her new book, Appetite for Reduction, which we'll be discussing today. She is also the founder of the popular website community, The Post-Punk Kitchen, where she shares her food wisdom with thousands of followers who are interested in compassionate and cruelty-free eating and living. Hello, Issa, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show today. As I mentioned last week when I was reviewing your book, you are one of my all-time favorite cookbook authors, and your writing and cooking styles inspire me to want to cook and eat delicious plant-based foods even more. Your new book is called Appetite for Reduction, 125 Fast and Filling Low-Fat Vegan Recipes, and in the book you say that you wrote it for yourself. Can you tell us what you mean by this and what goal you wanted to achieve by writing this new cookbook?
Well, yeah, I was trying to figure out what my next cookbook was going to be, and really the way I had been eating for a while was low-fat, whole food-based diet. So I thought, you know, if I'm eating this way, maybe the rest of the world wants some of these kinds of recipes too. So really it was so that I can get more into a groove with healthier eating and write a cookbook along the way.
Yeah, and in the book you say it's not just about weight loss and health, but the recipes, what can people expect to find in the book? I know that they are touted as being fairly low calorie as opposed to what other recipes might be, and they have nutritional and the calorie content is listed there. So what kinds of recipes can we expect to find in the book, just for people who are interested?
Well, it's all whole food-based recipes, so... Mm-hmm. Lots of grains, lots of beans, tofu, tempeh, lots and lots and lots of veggies in all different ways. So hopefully just bringing lots of flavor with and lots of cooking methods to your repertoire. So, you know, instead of, like a lot of low-fat kind of diety type books have a lot of fake ingredients and tricks, and this is how you hide the veggies. Kind of thing, but it's
not. Why would you want to hide veggies?
Yeah. So instead, here are a lot of really great methods to bring out the flavor of veggies.
Yeah,
without covering it in like low-fat cheese or whatever. Like lots of
that's a really good way to describe it. You know, I'm reading these recipes and my mouth is watering because they all look so good and they are all whole foods. They are vegetables and tofu and tempeh and that stuff is delicious, man. Like people need to know that. There is a well-branded myth out there that fat vegans don't exist and that if you're on a vegan plant-based diet, it's inevitable that you're going to be skinny. And this bugs me because I know from my own personal experience that this isn't true at all. What is your response to people who believe that there are no fat vegans?
I just say, look at me.
And that's what like, I say too to people.
Well, I have another thing is I don't have a moral problem with being fat, obviously. So the book isn't about, hey, you're so fat, do this, you have to change. You know, it's like you can be fat and eat healthy too. It doesn't just by looking at somebody, you don't, you know, like, yeah, I wrote a book about cupcakes, but I'm not eating cupcakes all the time. I eat pretty healthfully. But I'm still fat, so, and I'm vegan, and I have been for a really long time. I don't know, I have kind of deep feelings about this, about some of the health claims from being vegan, because although, you know, there's studies to back things up, and I feel like there's a lot of pressure put on somebody for being vegan. Oh, look, you're going to be vegan, and you're going to
lose a lot of weight,
cancer, and you're going to be skinny, and you're going to, you know, your skin is going to glow. Like, that's more of a fad diet to me. That's not really, like, I think it's great people are embracing health and embracing veganism as part of that because that's completely valid. But I also think, like, I don't want to overstate things or overpromise things or, like, have people just go vegan because they, you know, want their hair to be shiny, because what happens if that doesn't work? Like, then we have a lot of disgruntled ex-vegans.
I think what it comes down to is if you're eating well, you're going to feel better about yourself, and that's all that really matters.
I agree.
That's what I just really think it comes down to. So definitely, I'd like to say in the book you say that it's not just about reducing fat and calories, but it's about reduction in other aspects, such as the reduction of unhealthy ingredients, environmental impact, and suffering to animals. Can you speak to us more about these additional means of reduction via the food that we eat?
Well, obviously, if you're not eating animals, there's a reduction in the harm you're doing to animals, so that one is a no-brainer. You know, that's my primary reason for being vegan, is because I love animals. So there's that. And then, you know, the environmental stuff is pretty well-known now with the UN report stating that the most important thing we can do is move to a plant-based diet. So And then for as far as health goes, it's a reduction in things like cholesterol and animal fats, which are really bad for your heart. So there's tons of benefits of a vegan diet.
So I read the book from front to back before trying out any of the recipes, which for me is half the fun of discovering a new cookbook, but especially with your books, I find, as they are so interesting and entertaining to read. Even just the titles of the recipes are enticing to me, and as someone who wants to get back into the lifestyle of cooking wholesome and healthy vegan food and who would like to lose some weight as well, if that was a side benefit. But as I said before, it's more just about like feeling better for eating real food. And I already have, just from the food that I made from your book in the last few weeks. So I'm excited to keep making recipes from this book until hopefully I've tried them all. This is definitely one of those books that I want to, you know, use from beginning to the end. The next ones I personally have planned to make are the spicy blue potato and corn salad, the cauliflower mashed potatoes with chickpea piccata, and the summer loving curried corn and veggie chowder. They all sound delicious. I'm wondering, what are some of your favorite recipes from the book?
Let's see. Well, it's kind of hard to answer because you go through phases with things depending on what season it is, but through the winter, I was pretty much keeping full on lots of the stews.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked the chili with eggplants and lentils, and some of my favorite stuff is the Caribbean food. So the broiled blackened tofu and the curried black-eyed peas with plantains, those are some of my favorites, too. I don't know, I have so many favorites. Like, I know as spring approaches and summer approaches, I'm going to be filling up on the salad. So there's just so many good, versatile recipes in there, too. So maybe I won't be cooking, like, say, the quinoa, white bean, and kale stew. Maybe instead I'll be doing it with, like, black beans and Swiss chard. So it's like I use a lot of these recipes as templates for, you know, for my daily meals.
You know, one question that I think I have wondered about you in the past is you have so many recipes that you've personally developed that you've published, probably many others that, you know, you haven't even written down, and you're a food person, you're a cook, you know food, and you develop different dishes all the time. So do you find that, I know I've read before that you've said in one of your books that you make tofu scramble, for example, like three times a week, and the everyday chickpea salad you said, which I made, which is so good, in this new book, you said you eat it almost every day. That's why you called it that. So how do you, like,
do.
There's too much stuff to make, though. Like, I always never try to make the same thing twice because there's just too much that I want to make. How do you find that balance? Like, you must be making food all the time, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I cook a lot. I mean, if follows me on Twitter, I'm, like, always posting about what I make. Yeah, I'll have, like, a stew going, have a pie in the oven, and have, like, a salad dressing being prepared.
I love that.
Especially, yeah. So, I mean, the more you cook, the easier it is. So I know to somebody that could sound completely insane, but really we're talking an hour of my time here because, you know, I get everything. I'm pretty efficient when I work and get everything done, get everything cooking. I try and time things so that I can have something in the oven and something simmering on the stovetop at the same time, and maybe I'll also have some tofu being pressed and some cashews soaking to make a dressing. So it's just kind of like, I just cook a lot. If I cook like two or three meals a day, then I don't know. I can't do the math, but I'm sure that's a lot of recipes over a lifetime.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I just envy your lifestyle. I'm trying to do it here. And, you know, just for me to cook just like once a week. So that day I made made a dinner for our co-host here and a friend last week. And that was like a whole afternoon endeavor, and I had to plan it out and everything. But I do envy the lifestyle of those people who just get to cook and eat healthily all the time. Because what I do believe is that, you know, you only have one body and you want to treat it right. And you need to cook real food in order to achieve that. So in that sense, people should seek out books like yours and embrace them and love them as much as I do. And I know you have many, many, many followers and fans who also do. So let's talk about vegan food activism, as I know this is something that you're very well versed in. In tying it in with animal rights activism, I think it's fair to say that if a person wants to act for the animals, he or she should use to their advantage whatever skills they know best and use those skills and that knowledge as tools to help the animals. In your case, you have the knowledge and the gift of great vegan cooking. Can you tell us your thoughts on using food, particularly vegan food, as a tool for animal and social activism?
Sure. Well, it's funny about using whatever your skill is, because I kind of think that, but I also think that instead of using your skill, just do bake sales, because they're so easy.
Well, some people might say that they have no skills in baking, but
it's a little bit of a joke, because it's like, you might be a great violinist, but how much
anyone can bake, actually.
You are? Yeah.
I'm saying anyone can bake if they try.
Right.
Alyssa's saying she can't.
I don't look at it as this, like, skill that I have, and so I use it, because it is pretty universal. I mean, if you can follow a recipe, you have the same skill as me. So for things like food activism, I really, really believe anybody can do it. That's why it's kind of like, and I think it's so effective. I'm not saying drop whatever else you're doing and just do bake sales. I'm just saying if people are like, oh, I don't know what I can do, like, I'm great at math. How can I use that for activism? I don't know. But you can have a bake sale.
Anyone can do a bake sale.
You can be the cashier at the bake sale.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that you have quite a bit of experience in doing bake sale fundraisers. Can you maybe talk about some of them? And I know you have one coming up that maybe you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, well, probably the most well-known one was the bake sales for Haiti last year. Mm-hmm. And they ended up raising like $75,000.
I remember that.
For all of the bake sales combined, but that's just more because I have like an outlet to kind of be like, hey guys, let's do this. It's easy for me to help organize them. I'm not in every city organizing them, but it's more, I think people are just getting more and more into doing this kind of activism. There's also the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale that Gary in Virginia sets up. And I think it's just funner when you're all doing it together, when it's all going on at the same time, and it's also maybe more efficient when you have a specific goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, when a tragedy strikes, it's just such a positive outlet to, rather than sitting home, being upset, what can I do?
Yeah, it's something you can do. And everyone likes a good cupcake, so it's bound to be a success.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not just about the bake sale. It's like it's more than that because you do feel really helpless. It's having the community around you, having other people thinking about it, about the same things that you're thinking about, and just kind of like showing concern. So it's not all. And then on top of that, you're raising money.
We had a bake sale here in Vancouver last summer it was a benefit for a bunch of bunnies on a nearby university campus that were going to be killed. We had people giving us $100 bills and then just, taking whatever baked goods they wanted. And that raised $8,000, and I was just flabbergasted. And
that's amazing.
It is amazing. So I know that you're doing a fundraiser for the Japan earthquake disaster. Maybe you can mention when that is and where.
Yeah, that's in Omaha. So
where you live.
There's other, mine's on April 3rd. The information's all online. But I think there's other people doing bake sales for Japan, too. So I've just, I don't have an organized place where they're all listed as of the moment, but I'll get something eventually. I'm trying to figure out a more efficient way than putting it on my blog and updating it. So maybe getting a Facebook page where all the events are listed, just kind of like working on the technical. Hey, if anybody can help me with the technical aspects of it, let me know.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's because Facebook doesn't have a way that you can import other people's events into one main event thing.
I know. That's something we need to write to Mark Zuckerberg about, I think. Suggestion.
I don't know. I don't want to create new events because then it's confusing.
Here in Vancouver, we have somebody started a page where he just encourages all of the local groups to put their events events onto the page. So that could be an idea.
Yeah, it would be great though if it was also a calendar.
So yeah, that's what it is. It's a calendar, and you can see all of the events that are happening in Vancouver. So it's a really great resource that
maybe
people
I'll
have been looking for.
Yeah, we can set him up with you actually.
Yeah,
he knows who you are. Okay, so
just send me the page.
Yeah,
what was the point? Yeah, so other people are doing them. Right now, I've just been like retweeting people's bake sales, and in the Post Fun Kitchen forums, there's a list of bake sales too.
So you're originally from New York, and then you moved to Portland, and now you're living in Omaha, Nebraska, of all places.
Right. Obviously.
That would be the next logical place to move to. How are you finding Omaha as an animal and vegan-friendly place to live? And I know you wrote a Veg News article about it, so.
Yeah. It's surprisingly getting more and more vegan friendly. Like, I moved here because my boyfriend lives here, and I'm not from Portland, so we were kind of like, oh, should you move to Portland or should I move to Omaha? And it was just kind of like, I'll just move to Omaha since it made the most sense at the time. And I really wasn't sure what to expect at all. I kind of was like, oh, it's going to be like when I was 16, you know, trying to get vegan food into my corner store. So that's kind of fun. But it's actually a little bit more progressive than that. And we started this site called Vegan Omaha, yeah. And it has the listing of all of vegan-friendly places. And, you know, he's Mr. Vegan Omaha, so he's, like, you know, Twittering the whatever vegan finds. Like, we finally got We Can't Say It's Cheese in Whole Foods.
Oh, I love that stuff. Well, you have a yeah. Whole Foods. That's good to hear, you know.
Yeah, there's a Whole Foods, and there's also a health food store, and there's one vegan restaurant.
Wow.
And, yeah, and the more and more places are getting more vegan-friendly. There's one of the Pan-Asian restaurant has a whole separate vegan menu now, and a lot of restaurants are marking what's vegan on the menu. And we do these vegan meetups, which are so awesome in cities where there's not that much vegan-friendly stuff. Like, I don't know, in Portland or New York, it wouldn't really matter to
right.
do something like this. But here, we get these restaurants that aren't normally vegan to serve an all-vegan meal for, like, 40 people. So
and that's another form of vegan food activism, is to set
yeah.
that up. And we do that. We do those kinds of meetups here in Vancouver as well, which specifically I like having at non-vegan restaurants because it shows
yeah.
the restaurant that there's a market out there for this food, and it organizes it gives them a big group of customers to try it out on.
Right.
And then sometimes they often, like, will keep these dishes that they just
exactly.
made for our meetup on their regular menu.
Yeah,
so,
that's the best part. It's
yeah.
not just the meetup. You're, like, leaving all these vegan options in your wake.
That's how we got
and
a
also,
vegan spanakopita.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the easier we make it to be vegan, the more vegan options there are, the more vegans there will be. I mean, it's pretty logical. But we're doing the next one is at, the next one's the bake sale, and then after that, a pizza place is going to do all vegan stuff. And it's so cool to speak to the restaurant owners and the chefs because they really get into it. It's not just like, you know, if someone's just like, oh, yeah, I'll take the cheese off that and serve it to you, we're kind of like, you know, we'll pass.
And it's in their best interest as well, because if they're catering to that percentage of people who want a specific type of food, that is extra business they're getting.
Yeah, and
right?
vegans are such loyal customers.
Oh, totally.
That's the thing that I think that
they will come back.
That needs to be stressed is, yeah, especially if it says vegan options on the menu, they'll come. Vegans will come eat there.
The vegans
so for
will
the most
come.
Part, so. So, but yeah, it was great speaking to this owner because he's like, oh, yeah, I'll do this pesto and I'll do these side dishes and, oh, I'm going to be working with my farmer, so I'll have all these great, you know, family-style veggie dishes for you guys. And it just made me so happy. And then he's going to do a vegan dessert, too. So this is a place that's not normally vegan. It's going to be have this awesome vegan menu, probably leave some of the stuff on the menu, and also just see what a great business opportunity it is to have, you know, these vegan food items.
Really inspiring. I'd like to talk very quickly about the Post-Punk Kitchen and how that came to be. As I understand it, you used to do a vegan cooking show on Community Access Television, which later developed into the ppk.com website. Can you tell us about how you came to do this cooking show? Again, it's more vegan food activism. And then what happened from there into developing such a huge following of fans on the PPK?
It's kind of interesting because it was a little bit before, like, the internet fame thing.
Yeah.
It was actually right before that. Like, right now, like, how blogs come with book deals. It was, like, really we were just doing this cooking show just to do it, to have fun, to have a vegan cooking show because there maybe, I don't think there was one. Christina Cooks is a vegan cooking show, but I think it was Macrobiotic at the time. But anyway, we were just doing it to get some vegan food out there and have fun, basically. And then, you know, we had the website, too, and more people would kind of join up and be on the forums. And I had an interview in Punk Planet and the literary
Was that a TV
agent.
Show or?
No,
or?
It was a zine that was
around. Oh, zine, okay.
Yeah, I don't know, it was over 10 years it was around, and it recently folded, but A literary agent saw the interview and asked if I wanted to write a book, and then the rest is pretty much history.
History. Wow, that's neat to know. So
yeah, I didn't have to do anything.
Except be an amazing vegan cook.
Funny.
You just had to be yourself.
People are always writing to me. People are
You're
always
so authentic.
I get lots of emails a day that are like, how do I do this? You know, like, walk me through it. Like, I mean, I'm happy to help people, but I didn't go pitch my book anywhere. Like, it pretty much came to me.
It's come to you. Wow. Very,
yeah.
Very lucky. So I know you just got back from the Taste of Health vegan cruise that we've been talking about here on the show previously, and we're all very envious of those who get to go on a vegan cruise.
Yeah.
Can you tell us quickly how that was and what you did there? And I know you were saying earlier how you're getting into the Caribbean food, and I think you were doing some cooking demos of Caribbean food, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, growing up in Brooklyn, you have a lot of West Indian food. So basically, I just cook whatever influenced me, and that was a big influence. So, Brooklyn had this place called Veggie Castle, which was a white castle turned into a Caribbean restaurant that was all vegan. It was awesome. So, yeah, I did those cooking classes. I did a pancake cooking class, and I did a vegan seafood class. So that was really fun.
Interesting. So what projects can we expect to see from you in the future? I understand that there is a pie book in the works. Is that right?
There is. I have pie in the oven as we speak.
Wow. Pie in the sky.
Yeah. So that's what it's called.
Is it?
Yeah.
I could have given you that as a suggestion. I wish
Don't
I had thought
me.
Of it
it's
first.
It's already on Amazon, so I know that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so me and Terry are writing together, and it's the third book in our dessert trilogy.
Awesome. So before we end the show, I have a list of some quick questions here for you to answer as briefly as possible. Are you
quick
ready?
Fire. Yeah. Yeah.
Favorite type of non-dairy milk?
Almond Breeze, unsweetened.
Oh, me too. Most vegan-friendly city in the world that you've been to?
New York.
Favorite animal, charity, or charities?
Any farm sanctuary or feral cat rescue.
Awesome. Favorite vegan food product at the moment?
We can't say it's cheese. Hickory smoked cheese, probably.
That is my favorite, too. And I've got some in my fridge imported from the States because we don't have it here. Kitchen gadget that you can't live without?
My hands.
Good one. Favorite?
Do they count?
Of course. It's a gadget. Favorite unique food ingredient to work with at the moment?
We've been hitting the agar-agar pretty hard lately, so I'll say that.
For the pies, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
If you were given $1 million to spend solely on animals, what would you do with it?
I'd probably do trap, neuter, release stuff and try to end cat overpopulation.
Awesome. And finally, which flavor or type of vegan cupcake do you most wish would take over the world?
Agar-agar flavor. No, I'm just kidding. I've just been really digging the chocolate with chocolate ganache simple cupcake lately.
Oh, those ones are good. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Issa, to speak to us about your new vegan cookbook, Appetite for Reduction and Vegan Food Activism. I encourage our listeners to go out and get this book now. Also, please check out Issa's newly revamped website, theppk.com, for a plethora of original plant-based recipes that will be sure to inspire your taste buds, as well as a community forum to discuss vegan cooking and more. Thanks so much, Issa.
Thanks for having me on. It was really fun.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
On next week's show, as Allison mentioned earlier, we will have Erica from the Campaign Against the Cruelty to Animals to tell us more about the Canadian seal hunt and the motorcade from Vancouver to Whistler that CATCA and local group Hope Care will be leading to show the scale of murder inherent in the Canadian seal hunt. We'll also be looking forward to our Animal Voices day trip to VegFest in Seattle next weekend.
All right.
Yeah. If you have an animal or vegan-related event, news, or story idea that you would like to see us cover here on Animal Voices on 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio, you can let us know about it via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver, or on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. You can also listen to past shows on our website, www.animalvoices.org, or download them on iTunes. Just search Animal Voices Vancouver for our podcasts. And starting April 1st, we'll be doing a membership drive here at Co-op Radio. So if you'd like to support the volunteer work that we do, please consider becoming a member of Co-op Radio and putting Animal Voices down as your favorite show. And we will leave you now with the Green Being song, Meat Doesn't Grow on Trees.
And this is in honor of Meat Out. So remember, meatout.org, go meat free. Here's Meat Doesn't Grow on Trees. Oops.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
There's no sense of panic here, but there is fear. The Japanese